What's up, everyone? You're listening to Spectora Spotlight. My name is Kevin Wagstaff, one of the owners and founders of Spectora. This week, we have Amy Kissinger on the podcast. She is a successful real estate agent here in Denver, definitely a power agent, and she gives some really great insight into how inspectors can maybe approach agents and kind of get their foot in the door, and what, from an agent's perspective, inspectors should be doing while on site. Just a lot of great knowledge for new and experienced inspectors, because she definitely was open to using a new inspector when one of our local Spectora inspectors approached her. So great interview. I hope you guys gain a lot from it and enjoy.
Welcome, Amy. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Kevin.
How has the crazy summer been in the Denver real estate market?
It has been another busy summer in the market. A lot of activity on the buy side and the selling side. There's, a lot of people in the buyer pool right now trying to get in before more tentative rate hikes that are supposed to be happening this fall.
Yep. Sounds like a common theme. For those that don't know, why don't you tell us just a little bit about your business and kind of how you got to where you're at, how long you've been in the real estate business?
Definitely. I have been selling real estate in the Denver metro area since 2006. Started with a larger firm, and now I'm at a more boutique firm. It's in the Rhino area. It's called Urban Lux Real Estate. I sell over $10 million a year. In some years, obviously, and sales are better than others. Last year, it was close to $20
million. Wow, that's great.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, so love what I do. I work with a lot of really nice people. This year has been an interesting year just with the rising interest rates. We actually have more inventory than we've had in the last 4 years in the metro area. Homes that are priced well and in good condition are still selling quickly. Some sellers want to try certain prices, and you know, that may not be the best decision. The people that are air quotes trying certain prices, those houses are kind of languishing on the market, and they end up selling for less than they would have had they priced initially in the first place. One of the challenges I've had this year are people buying their move up property that may have bought their house, say, 3 or 4 years ago, since we've had some good appreciation in our market. People with healthy target price ranges, you know, kind of see houses and they say, this is what I can afford in my price range. So we're kind of running into that. I had a couple I was with the other day. The husband half of the couple said, we're in the top 2% of earners in the country, and we can't afford a 3-bedroom, 2-bath house in Denver. So, and then I've had people that have considered moving to Colorado, but then they say, you know, it's too expensive. So it'll be interesting to see what happens in the next couple of years, you know, as far as pricing and kind of what goes on geopolitically, but yeah, I've had a great year.
Nice, very nice.
And exactly,
and I think when in your email signature, even there's some awards that you've won a lot of years in a row, right? And what exactly were those?
So there's a 5280 magazine in Colorado. They have different kind of, you know, things in the magazine, home stuff, best restaurants, best doctors, best places to hike. So 5280 magazine, it's called a 5-star real estate award. And I have been awarded that several years in a row. It's based on customer service, actually. So it's the top 7% of realtors in the Denver metro area and their customer service that they provide. They send out a survey every year.
Nice.
So besides volume, I strive to be one of the best in the business by, you know, having a lot of integrity and just trying to provide really good customer service. And what that looks like is getting back to people quickly, researching homes, finding places that aren't on the market, you know, just anything you can do to set yourself apart, because there are a lot of realtors out there.
I love it. Well, congratulations, first of all. And you answered my next question, basically, was what the major things are that you think have set yourself apart to contribute to your success. Because I know a lot of our listeners are home inspectors and they work with agents of varying degrees of professionalism. And so I think you nailed it. Oh, getting back to people quickly. That's huge.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. And I think being professional in any industry is probably one of the best things you can do for others, you know, letting know people that you care not only about their home sale, but them and, you know, their needs and wants and what kind of makes them tick. I've had many times in the last few years since the inventory has been lower, as I mentioned, it's higher than it has been in the last 4 years, but it's still very low. I mean, I'll tell someone, I don't think you should buy this house. You know, this house isn't good for resale, you know, and you always have to think about resale when you're buying. But I just can't ethically do that, you know?
Yeah.
So I would want someone to tell me the same thing. You know, you shouldn't, there's something better for you. I will always tell someone you can find something better because I am very familiar with the inventory and what's out there. And, you know, you shouldn't buy a house just to buy a house.
I like it. And I think inspectors can even take a page out of that book. And the great ones that we work with have a similar mindset of, I just care about you making a good decision and I'm going to do my job.
Yes.
And I think that it's hard to fake that.
Oh, totally. Yes. Yeah. And, you know, maybe sometimes people don't agree with me, but I can sleep better at night knowing I did the right thing by saying there is something better. This isn't good for resale. And these are the reasons why. And I've seen this because I work with both buyers and sellers.
Yeah. And comments like that and guidance like that make me trust someone more inherently when they give it to me straight. And so I can only imagine that. That's what all your buyers and sellers have appreciated about you.
Yeah, thank you.
You mentioned some geopolitical stuff and kind of the state of the market. So you mentioned the Denver market being very similar and probably even more so than a lot of areas in the country with the supply and demand dynamic. Where do you see the local market in 1, 3, 5 years in Denver? And then we'll scale out to the national market.
Oh, sure. Well, I do have some handy statistics prepared for our call.
Love statistics. So, love it.
So the median sales price for September for detached homes is $445,000. That's up 8.54% year over year. And then for attached homes like condos and townhomes, the median sales price is $299,000, and that's up 9.05% year over year.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, compared to the U.S. as a whole, our market is faring much better than other markets. You know, you can just get more for your money in different places. You know, larger lots, but I think the reason, or I believe the reason, that we are faring so much better here in Colorado, is Colorado is ranked as having the best state economy in the U.S. For the second year in a row, because of our GDP and job growth. And that comes from a recent study by 24/7 Wall Street. Nice. There's also in Colorado, and I don't know how it is other places in the U.S., the cost of waiting to get into the market can be quite costly if things continue to go the way that they're going right now. So a house that's $425,000 today could cost $23,000 more in 1 year. And what that looks like for a mortgage payment is $286 more a month. So that's a 13% increase in cost for waiting a year. I read a quote the other day. It said the best time to buy real estate was 5 years ago. And it's true. I think everyone says that. But you have to get into the market sometime, you know, and I can't tell you, Kevin, or anyone else, you know, will things be different in 1 year? Will things be different in 2 years? But with all of the people moving to Colorado, they need places to live.
Yep.
So I foresee things continuing to appreciate because people are moving here. We have a healthy job market, which may be why some of the other places in the country are struggling. Places, I've talked to people in a couple other states, you know, where people are moving out of the state and moving to larger cities where there's more job opportunities. And here in Colorado, we get a lot of pull because we have outdoor activities and the mountains and, you know, everything that makes people love Colorado. Over 300 days of sunshine.
Yep, the famous stat.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's we talk to inspectors from across the country, and there's a couple booming areas. But it's hard to believe that the growth can continue on this pace in some of these bigger areas. But from what I see, at least in the Denver market, for anyone listening that's thinking about moving to a city like a Seattle or a Denver or an Austin, there's just the jobs. Oh, it's the jobs,
right.
And keep pushing everything higher.
Yeah, that's true. Especially in those cities that you mentioned. I've also heard that about San Francisco. But then you hear one of the places that I was talking to someone that's struggling is St. Louis. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if they have quite as healthy of a job market or, you know, why people would leave, you know, the Midwest for some other place, you know, the pool, right. You know, it depends on, you know, job stability, lifestyle, sunshine. I did talk to someone in Michigan, speaking of sunshine, and, you know, I hear it's dreary there. I haven't spent much time there, but.
It is. All my family's from there. So it's.
There you go.
Winter's a tough time.
You can speak credibly about it.
You know, you hide away and you get a little down all winter. So that's why I think people are moving to Denver. And so it's great.
Yeah.
Great for realtors, great for home inspectors, good for the market. And so, yeah, I see it continuing.
Yes, I do too.
Switching gears a little bit, I wanted to get, I've been wanting to ask you this for months and other agents as well, to get their take on every other month I hear about like an Open Door, a Trelora, these companies that are coming in and trying to shake up the way a real estate transaction is done from end to end. You know, some have flamed out and gone out of business, but others are raising money and trying to control the whole process. What is your take on that and the impact on customers? And then also, just on the overall realtor pool and market?
Yes, that is a great question. I personally have not worked with Trelora as of yet. I did have a client that wrote an offer on one of their properties. Our offer ended up not working out, but it was a blessing in disguise. as a lot of things are. But the thing with Trelora is whenever I would call to talk to someone, you're in kind of this main system where you're talking to a different person every time, but that person may not know much about the house. So it was kind of frustrating from that aspect because someone that you may have talked to previously wouldn't know what questions you were asking or wouldn't be on the same page. And we all have limited time during the day. Trelora was doing for a long time, I believe it was a $2,500 flat fee to buyer's agent. I don't know what they do on the listing side because that's not the company that I work for. But I have been seeing a lot more of their listings offering more than the $2,500, most likely because we do have more inventory than we've had in the last several years. So they have to compete. I have heard, I don't do this, but I have heard that a lot of people, realtors, won't show Trelora properties because they only offer that fee. So I have been seeing more of the customary buyer's side fee, the 2.8% that gets paid to the buyer's agent firm. I've been seeing more of that. And then in the broker remarks on their listings, I've been seeing that you can ask for X amount of commission. So even though it says $2,500, you can ask for the customary 2.8%.
Gotcha.
So it'll be interesting to see what happens with these companies. I mean, I see the appeal, but I don't know if they offer the same level of customer service as, you know, a full service company.
Yeah, it makes sense. I think it's trying to kind of commoditize something that is pretty personal and unique. And so I get what they're trying to do. It's just such a big, complex world and transaction to, it's just be interesting to see how it plays out if they can really crack that. Because yeah, when I was a realtor, I definitely heard about people steering away from those types of properties, just for people, for agents that are looking out for their own incentives, their own pockets. And so it's, I guess it's not my place to say whether that's right or wrong, or everyone should do what's best for them. But yeah, it's just it's a factor that was definitely weighted with agents.
Yeah, right. So yeah, and I'm happy to show those properties because it could be a good fit for one of my clients. But yes, everyone has to do what's best for them.
Yeah. It's just so many people, I think, trying to shake up the industry and the model, but it has a lot of legacy and it has a lot of you know, power and money behind it. So I'm kind of up in the air as if it'll change in our lifetime or in our working careers, you know, in the next 10, 20 years.
Yes, I concur.
Because as a realtor, honestly, there were clients where I certainly felt like I earned all of my commission. And then there's clients where you gain efficiency, where you say, hey, that was a quick and easy one. And I maybe didn't feel like I truly grinded as much as I did on the person that I showed 100 houses to. So,
oh, for sure, Kevin. Yeah, definitely. Based on the fee, I may make my dollar per hour maybe $5,
right,
or higher.
It balances out.
Always. Yeah, it does, and I'm always thankful for any business, and I have been blessed with some wonderful people I work with. Just want to help them find the right house for them.
Exactly. It's a great, you know, Denver specifically, a great market, great people moving here. So if you're moving to Denver, definitely call Amy. I'll leave her contact information in the description here. But okay.
Thank you.
So, switching over to home inspections, because we have listeners that are real estate, but also home inspectors. So let's start from the beginning and just talk about how you personally view the home inspection part of the transaction. So from early in your career till now, once they go under contract, is that kind of when your mind shifts into, okay, what next?
Yes. I tell all my buy side clients, the inspection, especially on an older home, is the biggest hurdle in the transaction. And also on the listing side, if you're a seller, it's guiding them through that process. One thing that I try to do to educate the buy side is letting them know that there's a fine line between asking for health and safety items and sending a seller over the edge, which can happen, you know, because you don't want the seller to raise their hands in the air and say, well, I have a backup offer in place. Right. And sometimes that backup offer can be higher and limiting inspection items, you know, to as is condition or health and safety only. A thorough inspection is well worth its weight in gold. When I first started back in 2006, I got a home inspector referral, and that was the first and last time I had used that inspector. He left an oven on in a vacant house.
Oh my goodness.
That's a big deal.
So
it's been, just trying to find the best inspector. And now I have a great Spectora inspector that I try to work with exclusively. Love the Spectora program. It makes it very easy to write up inspection objections. In our market at this time, whether you don't put any limits on the inspection as far as health and safety items only, as is, you still want to do a thorough inspection. And depending on the property, if it's a condo or if it's a single family home, it's the general home inspection, the sewer scope inspection, and then a radon test. If you have to buy a home in our market in as-is condition, you have this great report that you can look at and say, okay, I've closed on the property now. These are the things that I need to fix, whether I'm going to live in the property or if I'm using it as a rental, and it makes it easy to be able to do that.
Nice. So do you recommend to your clients to refer back to the report? Because I know as an agent, I would say, hey, some people just throw this in a drawer and never look at it again. But if you have a good inspector, use this as a reference point of understanding what material your plumbing pipes are or things like that.
Oh, totally. Yes. And I think it's important too, if you have something come up at your house, say in the first, 6 months of owning it or a year of owning it, you can go back to that report and say, oh, the inspector noted that this appliance was nearing the end of its useful life. So it's very important to have a thorough inspection. If you're on the listing side, you also want to be able to review the inspection report with your seller and say, oh, okay, we can see pictures of this issue. Like, we know that this is a real issue. We have to get this addressed. But then the inspector will also, note things like, oh, there's cracks in the concrete. So, stuff is on the small side like that you may want to get addressed in time, but maybe not causing any issues at this time. But, there's also things that they'll see by doing a thorough inspection that you can look at and decide whether you want to repair it now or later that you may not see, if you can't attend the inspection or you can't attend the inspection.
Definitely. And that's a great lead into my next question. Do you attend most inspections with your buyers? And if so, how is that what does that look like for you, walking them through, talking about kind of the DIY, you can go to Home Depot and fix this type items versus, okay, we'll look into that some more. That could be a bigger.
You know, I try to attend every inspection with buyers that I can. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I always think it's good to have an extra set of eyes.
Yes.
And I point stuff out that I might see, but I always preface it by saying I'm not a home inspector. I leave that to the experts. But if I see a huge crack in the wall, you know, I can say, oh, this might be an issue. Uh-huh. And then we can get the inspector will see it, you know, but we can get their thoughts on that because they're the trained professional. I'm trained at negotiating, but not inspecting. But I have attended so many inspections. And I'm still learning stuff. I was reading about roof trusses the other day. So
it's good. Nice.
Yeah. It's good to always be learning, you know, yeah. And challenging yourself. So
our audience probably perked up when they heard the word roof trusses. That's their language. That's the home inspection industry language. That's
yes.
Great. So I'm curious from your perspective, because obviously I've been a home buyer, I've been an agent, and I always tried that little dance of kind of asking the home inspector a thing or two, but then kind of floating around, not being in his hair. Like, how do you manage the client walking around through the house along with the home inspector? It's kind of a unique dynamic.
Yes, that's a good question. You know, I think it depends on the buyer. I find that some of my engineer clients like to follow around the home inspector just because they're, you know, more curious. I always bring a notebook to take notes just so I can have them for my own records beyond the home inspection report.
Mm-hmm.
And then I always do a follow-up at the end of the inspection before I get the report so I can start reviewing that, you know, the issues that came up in the inspection. And I can, you know, kind of go through it with my buyers before we get the full report with all the photos. And I think that that's really helpful. Some people, you know, like to follow around the inspector. Some people don't. and then the inspector can say too at the beginning of the inspection, you know, you can follow me if you want, or I'll come get you if I see something of concern or something notable. And I think people are totally fine with that too, because they know that the inspector will come get them, you know, and then we can just chitty chat about the Broncos and the
right, right, right.
Skiing.
What do you advise for new or experienced inspectors as kind of that initial, you know, after the introduction of framing when to talk to them or here's what we're going to do? Like, what do you like to see from an inspector of making the client feel like they're doing their best job, but also I'm here for you if you want to chat about something?
Oh, sure. After the initial kind of meet and greet, I like when the inspector will say, you know, I'll come get you if I need anything, or feel free to follow me around. I'm here to answer questions, you know, during, after the inspection, because if you're a first time home buyer, then, you know, you have questions and there's no stupid questions when you're buying a house.
Right.
So you want your inspector to be available, not just during the inspection, but afterwards, if you have questions on the report.
Definitely. And we preached our inspectors that you're in the customer service business also. You're not just a home inspector, and modern customer service standards have gone up dramatically. And so the inspectors that simply, and you can tell me if you agree, the inspectors that say it with a smile, that shake your hand, that look you in the eye, that, you know, can make
yes.
basic conversation with you and make you feel like you're not throwing your life away into this house, you know, because most people are nervous.
Right.
Totally. It goes a long way, right?
Oh, it definitely does. Yeah. And just, you know, being helpful, you know, just because the inspectors are trained in so many different aspects of purchasing a home. You know, they've seen many things that I haven't seen, that the buyers haven't seen. And so they can speak to their level of health and safety. You know, is this furnace going to go out in the next, you know, 3 to 5 years? No one knows for sure.
Right.
But they can say, you know, this is an expense that should be considered when buying this property, or if the roof has hail damage, you know, because the little things and the big things, they all add up.
Big time, big time. I do you feel inspectors should give their opinions a little more on ranges or potential, you know, whether it's rough dollar amounts or rough life expectancies? Because I personally feel it drove me nuts when I bought my last house. Was inspector rode the fence on everything, didn't give me even his opinion or a straight answer or range when I knew he knew the answer of about how long this would last. And it drove me nuts because I'm like,
right,
you can't be so scared of getting sued that you're no longer helpful to me.
I know.
Bonkers.
Yes, I agree. Well, because a range isn't a, you know, this is definitely going to happen. You
right.
know, say the inspector says, this furnace may have 5 more years of useful life. Hey, if it lasts 8, fantastic, right? You
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
But then you can say, worst case scenario, I may have to get a new one in 5 years. So I think that's really important, you know, and in Colorado, we do have, you know, a higher instance of hailstorms, and, you know, you could use insurance to get a new roof, but, you know, you may not want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So if a roof is shot, I mean, that can be $10,000, you know, more. It just depends on the house, but I do think it's great when an inspector can, like you said, look you in the eye and be upfront and say, you know, this doesn't look good, or this looks okay. I think you're good here. You know, I try to, if I have a structural issue in an inspection, that I think can be a point of termination of a contract.
Mm-hmm.
But typically inspections go pretty well, you know, and you submit your inspection objection to the seller, and if they're a reasonable seller, then they give you a reasonable inspection resolution, and then you can get past that in the contract. But the importance of an inspection is just, it's very important, because you want to know what you're going into eyes wide open. And if you have an inspector that is very upfront about, you know, time ranges, this isn't good, this is good, you know, I think that's ideal.
Oh, I completely agree. And I think there is a new breed of inspectors that we're seeing that are a little more personable and articulate and able to kind of walk that fine line of, here's some really complex technical information, but I'm not going to overwhelm you, and I'm still going to maybe make you laugh or smile a little bit. So it's really cool that we're working with some inspectors where I'm like, wow, you really guide people through this process, as opposed to kind of the traditional, I think, image of home inspectors, which is an old disgruntled ex-plumber or handyman that just is going to be gruff and just hand you a piece of paper at the end, instead of a true consultant and guidance.
Right. Yeah. And the Spectora reports, I love, because it gives, you know, health hazards. You maybe should do something about this. And then they check all these things, and it's very easy to navigate the report and look for those health hazards, maybe a cosmetic item like a sidewalk being cracked. So it's good to review when you're submitting your inspection objection over to the seller, and then you can see what's very important, what may not be as important. And again, it just depends on the buyer, you know, what's important to you. But it makes it easy to navigate through that part of the inspection. And also for the seller and selling agent, It makes them easy. It makes it easier for them to review as well and be able to get through the inspection process quickly, because that can be a big hurdle in the contract.
Oh, definitely. I went through a few of those in my days. I'm sure you've had some nightmare stories of just dealing with that aspect of it, probably for, you know, some other reasons, but, thanks for the shout on the report. I mean, for what it's worth, the feedback we've gotten from agents across the country has been outstanding. And so that was our goal from the beginning, was making the report visual and easier to digest. Can you speak to a little bit about maybe even the first time you saw that report versus the PDFs we're all used to in the past? Where in the past, I would always get that huge honking PDF and say, like, oh my God, I'd sit down at my desk and say, damn it, I got to go through this thing and pick out language. I can't copy and paste it because formatting's messed up. So tell me a little bit about your experience with that, because I didn't know what I was missing. I didn't know what I didn't have at the time when I was looking at these PDFs. I just thought, well, that's the way it is and gotta do it.
Totally. Because depending on the inspection, the report can be 25 pages or 75 pages. So the great thing about Spectora, especially in our competitive market here, I find it's important to ask for health and safety items. Mm-hmm. So it's easy to navigate through the report and kind of come up with a list that you can go through with your buyer and see which items are the most important and be able to ask for those instead of reviewing, because I work with many busy professionals and we work together on the inspection objection. Mm-hmm. And they also appreciate when they can go through and say, oh, these are, you know, either big ticket items, health and safety items that you want to be able to address. Even if the seller says we're not going to address them, you still want to take care of them, especially if you have a family, you know, if there's, say, an ungrounded outlet, you know, or an electrical issue. I mean, you just have to be able to easily navigate through those reports instead of reading through 75 pages and trying to find one item on page 47.
Yeah, that's a great point. I feel bad, but when we talk to new inspectors every day, I tell them, I hate to burst your bubble, but no one's going to read your whole report. Like, these people are busy. Home buyers are usually flustered and all over the place during the process. Agents are very busy. So presentation is a lot of the package. And so I think that's, mm-hmm. that's part of why we've had so much success, is because there's a lot of great home inspectors. It's just the technology and presentation that's lacking, because our industry was kind of left in the past. And so, As a buyer and agent, you're right. Just navigating through that, the user experience, is a big deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's just, you don't want to overwhelm people, because the process of buying a home can be overwhelming for some, especially if there's a loan in place. So the Spectora I love, because it goes through all the items that are inspected, and then they have recommendations, and then they have safety hazards. So you're easily able to look through, and even the colors that they use on the reports. The safety hazards are in red. The recommendations are in orange. So, you know, red is bad.
Right.
at the simplest sense in the report, you know, you want to get those addressed.
You know, and we didn't take lightly all the psychological studies out there that show, like, limiting options can help, you know, not overwhelm the brain. And so I think just by bucketing them and, you know, from a consumer perspective, it makes sense to say, okay, this simplifies it for me, rather than 8 pages of a summary where it's like, I don't even know where to start with all these things. Like,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. But anyhow, glad you love the reports. How did you initially choose your home inspectors throughout the years? So, like, even from the beginning of your career, I'm very curious how a new agent gets this circle of professionals that they recommend.
Right. That is a great question. So when I first started in the industry, I had a mentor, mm-hmm. and the mentor referred me to the home inspector that left the oven on. But then after that, I got another referral for a company. And I used that company for several years. There were three inspectors. One of the ones I liked the best, if I couldn't get on his schedule, then the other two, I said, well, okay, if he's not available. And then he just, the other inspectors, I feel like they would scare my buyers. And that's not ideal, you know, especially for a first time home buyer. So just kind of maybe the way that they worded things, but the buyers would freak out rather than someone, an inspector that's very matter of fact, you
right.
know,
right.
And just like, this is the way it is. This could cause an issue. This maybe won't cause an issue. And then the inspectors that kind of scared the buyers might have been like, oh, wow. You know,
right.
I mean, you never want to hear that at an inspection unless it's like, wow, it's a beautiful kitchen, you know?
Yeah.
So, anyway, that particular inspector, he had some family issues that came up, and then he just got to be too busy. And lo and behold, I started using the inspector now that uses Spectora. And I have been totally impressed with my go-to inspector, totally impressed with the Spectora platform. I would use any inspector, or at least give an inspector a chance that uses the Spectora platform, you know, because I do think that you need to have two or three inspectors in
Definitely.
Case one's not available that works for you and your client's schedule. So I'm always happy to give an inspector a chance that uses Spectora, just because I think it's such a great platform. And if they don't scare my buyers, then that's even better.
That's a must. I want to dig into that a bit, because I don't feel like there's much training or resources or guidance for inspectors on this huge point that agents literally, you know, use or don't use an inspector for. And that's just how they frame things and how they word things. And so I don't know if there's a way inspectors can work on this, or is it just a conscious effort of saying, hey, keep an even keeled, you know, tone and stay professional. There's training on that, of the soft skills, you know, which inspectors are traditionally not great with.
Yeah. So I think, obviously always be professional, but I believe being able to talk to people in a very matter of fact way, mm-hmm. you know, kind of like a scientific way that has no emotion in it is, you know, it is what it is. This could cause a problem. This isn't a problem, but just not, because if you speak with emotion, then the buyer who's already going through an emotional process of buying a home, you know, they've been out there searching, say they've seen 40 houses, they finally find a home they love, they are emotional about it.
Mm-hmm.
And if the inspector's emotional, you know, about something, that could spill over to the buyer, and then people just get worked up rather than an inspector just stating the facts.
Completely agree. Perfectly worded. So lesson to all you inspectors out there, pay attention to your wording. Think about how you're framing things. You can still do your job and CYA while still not freaking out a client. And I think that's just a very huge point for them to learn and somewhat train their minds on.
Oh, for sure. Yes. Yeah, definitely the CYA is, you know, first and foremost, but just, you know, stating the facts. And sometimes the facts aren't good, you know,
right,
if there's
right.
a structural issue, but you're still doing your job and you're doing it to the best of your ability. And if the transaction works out, great. And if it doesn't, that's great too. It just means that, again, the blessing in disguise, there's a better house out there for that buyer.
I love it. And I'm sure all inspectors listening, can hope to find more agents that have the mindset like yourself? Because we talk with some inspectors that end up doing things for better or worse for agents, bending over backwards or doing things ethically they don't agree with. So I just tell certain inspectors, certain agents may not be worth your time or the, crossing your boundaries for. So this is good
for sure.
This hopefully gives inspectors that are new an idea of what good agents are like and kind of their tone and how they, so this is very helpful.
And so, it says it has to be a good fit for both the inspector and the agent. And if there's an agent that's not being ethical, you don't want to work with that person anyway.
It's not worth it. It's just not worth it.
No, never worth it.
So what, this might be the most important question of the podcast. What, for you rewind back when, say you got an email or a call from Dylan or from another inspector, what could they possibly say to pique your interest outside of leading with maybe the report and a modern experience? Cause we push a lot of our inspectors to lead with that because it's a competitive advantage. Outside of that, what could someone say to you to make you say, oh, okay, I'll give you a shot?
You know, I'd say just follow up. I don't think it would be bad for an initial meeting to be over coffee, just so you can see if you're a good fit with each other. You can kind of go through how an inspector does the inspection, how he runs his business. And then I would definitely say, if you meet a realtor that you enjoy, keep following up. Maybe their other inspector that they like to use is busy, and then they'll come back to you, but just like anything, selling yourself and being in sales, keep asking until you get a yes.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And there's a tactful way to do it. I think we've all heard of books or read books where it's like, there's an art to following up professionally and adding little chunks of value, maybe alluding to the value you provide.
Yes. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Maybe say, here are some tips to get your, furnace ready for fall, or send out helpful information. Like, I had this issue come up in an inspection. This is how we dealt with it, because every house is different. And so, an inspector, if they can give, like you said, Kevin, tidbits of helpful information, it shows how knowledgeable they are and how they can be helpful.
Oh, I'm so glad you brought that up. I'm smiling through the microphone here because we, since we do digital marketing for inspectors, we always preach, hey, more about furnace and AC maintenance and anything that you probably just wake up thinking about than the average person. Yeah. So write a few sentences about it every time you come across something, or have a blog, because if an inspector sends you, say, an article, there's a chance you could pass it along to your clients, right?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I do that too. If I see a helpful article on the real estate market, I pass it along to a client. Clients love stuff like that. Yeah. So realtors will love stuff like that too. I mean, we always strive to be learning and it's good to learn something every day.
Absolutely. And as an agent, I remember if they passed me an article, I look good by passing that along to my prospective buyers or sellers, and everyone wins at that point.
Yeah, everyone wins. Well, hey, Kevin, I'm going to have to get going, but I sure enjoyed our conversation today. Any other questions?
I was just going to ask you anything else that I should have asked or that you want to discuss or get out there, or just a final piece of advice for inspectors that are looking to meet more agents?
I find that networking, happy hours can be helpful. There's so many new realtors in our market right now, even going by, say, some of the larger companies where they're always hiring on new agents, maybe like Coldwell Banker or Keller Williams, going by and scheduling some time with the managing broker, dropping off some of your cards, maybe trying to, bring coffee and donuts and do a meet and greet with some of the agents, because there are always agents that are looking for great inspectors, and anything you can do to sell yourself apart, I believe is great.
I love it. I love it. I won't keep you much longer. Thank you so, so much. I think there's a ton of helpful information here. We really appreciate you joining us.
Sure thing, Kevin. Well, you have a wonderful day, and I'll talk to you soon.
All right, Amy. Thanks. Take care.
Okay.